Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller. In a few programs this spring, we're exploring the role of the Native artist. In contrasting statements, we'll hear two artists, an Athabaskan writer and poet, and an Eskimo carver, talk about what it means to be an artist and Native. Paul Tialana and Mary Tallmountain were recorded at the Institute of Alaska Native Arts' first confabulation in Fairbanks.
I'm an Alaska Native person, but I am a detached Alaska Native person. I was adopted from my people at three and was raised in the lower 48, where I was educated and where I first learned to write. I was writing very early, at like the age of 10. I think that was when my first poem was published. It was a poor little straggling thing, but it was me and it was Alaska. And the things that I have written since then have all been pertaining to Alaska. Sometimes I veer off and write something in the other culture, but essentially what I write and what I think goes back to those fragmented things that Jim was talking about that we have received from our ancestors and which we carry, and the responsibility for which we will always carry. The excellence, I think that came down through my genes, the desire for excellence in writing, and respect for my materials, which are words, which are my observations of people, which are my abilities to select, and which are all artists' properties. And should be needfully their properties to have this integrity of which he speaks. In my experience outside, I have done many lectures, many poetry readings in universities, in libraries, and in the schools, and I have found that people are abysmally ignorant in the lower 48, even now, in this enlightened age, about Alaska, about this great, beautiful state in which we live. And now that it is a state, I think it behooves us to try to forward this knowledge as far as is possible with what we have. For the simple reason that they, out there, we have a responsibility to bring them knowledge. These people don't know beauty. They don't know what an uncluttered land is. Some of those children just walk on cement all day. They never see grass. They never see trees. They have never seen a moose. They don't know how big a salmon is. They have to pay $15 or $20 a pound for salmon. So that is one of the losses. And I think it represents a certain collective mindset that we must combat without the use of violence. I don't believe violence belongs anywhere in art, in any form of art. But there are other ways to combat this collective mindset. For instance, the children. I think that begins very early, that we must see that our children, I say our children, I mean the Alaska children are my children too. The Alaska children are the children of all the world. We all belong to each other. And these children, deserve, and it is our obligation to give them a different mindset. But in any form of art, we share all this responsibility together, because I think that it's like throwing a pebble into a river or a pond. The ripples run outwards and the ripples run. And this never stops. It goes on out into eternity. But we do have to keep a spirit of calm and a sort of an easy detachment. There's no room for anger. It takes a long time to get over that anger, I must say, being a multicultural person. I suffered with it for a long, long time. But with years, with observation, with writing, with journal keeping, I finally overcame that. And I think that we can all do that, whether we have it, whether we don't, whether it's obvious or not. And I think my time is getting close, so I wrote a little poem here that illustrates something of what I'm saying. To build the bridge, recall the ancient ones in honorable spirit bowed their heads and bodies to benign and mothering earth. This borrowed earth, this mist blue jewel floating out of the eye of God. Across eons there runs a current of their blood, flesh, spirit, reflected gifts which mestizos we, breeds we, carry for those ancient ones who hover murmuring, inexorable in our astonishing genes. We, mote in eye, bone in throat, oh, a different people, hung between worlds, invisible, still undealt with by a new totalitarian culture, so careless of the treasure. Now it is time, with word, with image, songs and dancing, with all that we contain of calm, of hard-won detachment, shall we stand to the task. Now it is time to build the bridge. Thank you.
My name is Paul Kiolana. I was born and raised at King Island, and I'm residing in Anchorage. When I give a talk to a school, and whoever wanted me to give some lecture, I said, I don't have no written statement to present, because that's the way our ancestors used to do it, with no paper. And I said to also young people, if you want to write what I said, you are free to do it, because I would say, traditional way, we don't write anything. We keep it in our mind, in our heart, and pass it down to our young people. I think I was born as the traditional artist. Because when I was born, we don't have no school. So everything I've learned is all traditional way, traditional art. What's the traditional art is to me? That's something the old folks create, and I have to learn by heart. Because our ancestors also use their body measurement to make something. They don't have no ruler, no pencil. When they want to make kayak, they use their body measurements. When the lady want to make mukluks, she used her hand, Mason. So, everything I create or made in form reminds me about something I used to have or ate, utilize the fur or the skins of the animal. Because that's how I have been taught. When I want to make a seal, little eyed seal, it reminds me about seal hook. Retrieving line for seal hook, harpoon line, and many other things. That's how I appreciate what I made. Because those only ones I know and feel happy in myself. I think nowadays it's hard to get some material because we have all kinds of rules and regulations by state and federal government. I was trained to be a professional hunter, not administrator. And I feel guilty. As a professional trained hunter, I feel guilt inside. Because every time I kill some animal, I break the law, the state law, the federal government law. Also, last couple years, when I tried to make the skin boat in Anchorage, I couldn't get the material because it's not available in Anchorage. Because every time when I turn around and want to get some material, it's somebody's property. So in order to make that skin boat, I got some material from Nome, Kenai, Mile 62 and Sword Highway, Wasilla, and part of from the university property. It took me at least about 2.5 years, which would take about maybe 4 months in our village. So I hope some of those regulations should be lifted for us if we want to make some traditional art. So, as I see it, in the past 12 years in Anchorage, I would urge the young people, stay your traditional way of life, your ancestral life, because it brings a lot of happiness. Like, for instance, when I was a kid at King Island, the men is so quiet in our clubhouse, and all the person pick up a drum and wet it and start to sing. It's just like a radio to us, or something like a television, because that old person, when he sing a song, he tell about the composer of the song, what kind of man is this. It is, to me, this history story passed on to us. And like I said, you young people should study about your native culture, because that's the only answer to our problem today. Thank you.
You've been listening to Paul Tialana, a traditional artist from King Island, and Mary Tallmountain, a writer born in Nulato and educated in the Lower 48. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. Whether or not Native artists like the label, Native art is a category in the art business. Artists, craft workers, and art purchasers should understand some of the rules of buying and selling Native art. For buyer and seller, there is a love-hate relationship with shops and galleries. And to help explain what the market in Native art is like from the seller's point of view is Jane Schulberg, owner of a Seattle gallery called Snow Goose Associates. Her presentation was recorded at the Artist Confab, sponsored by the Institute of Alaska Native Arts in Fairbanks.
Operating galleries is not as easy a venture as it may seem. The general picture of a gallery owner seems to be a sort of money-grubbing creature who may or may not have a good eye for art, who possibly rips off the artists, and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm here to tell you that running a gallery is extremely hard work, that in the Seattle area alone, about 30 new galleries open each year and about the same number close. Now, it isn't the same 30 each year, but it's a 30, and I think I read someplace that the life of an average gallery is about 18 months. If you prorated the people who have been in business 20 years and the people who are starting out, and average it out, you'd find that a gallery survives about 18 months, which should give you some idea on the difficulties that come on the other end of the scale. Now, in our particular gallery, it's a highly personal business. It's my prime interest, and I use myself and my eye as criterion for what I do. Now, this may be terrible, and you may think I have terrible taste, but at least it is a criterion, and so far it has worked very well. I pick everything personally. I only carry works that I myself would like to live with and would like to have in my own home. And if the gallery turns belly up next week, I'll have a fabulous collection. So that's sort of my ace in the hole, you know. When you've had 2 days and nobody has come into the gallery, I say, okay, I'll just have the best Eskimo and Northwest Coast Indian art collection in the entire West Coast of the United States. That's fine. I mean, that's my stopgap. But fortunately, another customer usually does turn up, and this doesn't happen. We try to give a lot of personal attention to both the artist and the customer. Namely, we're interested in the artist. We're interested in furthering his career. We're interested in finding ways of encouraging him to bring out the very best that he has within himself. And from the standpoint of the customer, we try to give them personal attention, speak to almost everyone who comes in who wants to be spoken to, give them information. We carry, for instance, a tremendous number of books. In fact, we have too many books for our space, but it's a real matter of pride with all of us who work there that we are not just selling art, we're trying to educate the public into what is going on, into the background of the Indian peoples, the Eskimo peoples, into the art that they are creating. For instance, when we sell a print, we give them a sheet of very strict instructions about how this print is to be framed, not artistically, but for the preservation of the print, because I say to them, look, this kind of print is never going to be done again. It reflects a spirit, it reflects a kind of life which is disappearing, and you are a conservator of a heritage if you are buying one of these prints, and it behooves you to give it the care that it deserves, to preserve it as long as possible. Now, as far as practical things for artists coming up, there are many outlets and ways of selling your things. I mean, they've been brought up here more or less in one way or another today. Of course, you can go around and pawn things, as Melvin said he had to do, try and sell them himself, and he'll tell you it was unpleasant, and he spent an awful lot of time. You can sell things to shops, and there's a tremendous variety of shops. There's some shops that have extremely high standards, who will carry a variety of things, but will have very good standards for what they do. And then you can try and get yourself allied to a gallery. Now, the difference between a gallery and a shop, as I see it, is that the gallery is not just interested in selling, but obviously we're interested in selling. We're interested in selling so we can stay in business and survive, and we're interested in providing the artists with income so they can continue to be artists. But the main thing is that we wish to present an artist and art to the public. We wish to broaden the spectrum for the public, their awareness. When we first opened 10 years ago, hardly anybody in the entire Seattle area had heard of any of the Canadian Eskimo communities, Cape Dorset or what have you. And we do carry their work as well. We carry all North American Eskimo things. And we now have people standing in line to get into, say, a Cape Dorset print show so that they will be number one or number two to get their first choice and this sort of thing. So we have done a job of publicizing, of bringing to the world the fact that fantastic art is being created in the Northwest Coast and in the Arctic. I ought to tell you in the first place that the true realities of it are that that there are many, many more artists who want to be associated with a gallery than there are galleries who can absorb them. It's just sort of a fact of statistics. So that a gallery has to pick and choose, and some galleries, and we do too, will carry some works by an artist, not give him one-man show, because we simply haven't got time in our calendar, and try and promote the artist and see how he will be doing. And then the ultimate thing that we try to do, of course, is to give you one-man or group shows. When you're really ready, when you've really got a body of work that is original and ready to go before the public, a gallery will give you a one-man show. Now, there's frequently a lot of comments about, you know, galleries being the big bad wolf, and why should the price at a gallery be twice or more what you sold it to the person for, and so forth. And I think we ought to realize here that a gallery is providing a service of mutual benefit to themselves and to the artist. No artist has to go to a gallery. There is absolutely no compulsion on anybody's part. You've got absolute freedom of choice. But if you decide that there is a gallery that is congenial to you and you want to go with the gallery, what the gallery does for you is relieve the artist of having to spend time being a retail sales clerk, which is a dreadful job. I mean, if I weren't dealing in the art that I love, I would quit tomorrow, because dealing with the public and all their fancies and questions and misconceptions and ideas is totally exasperating. And we spend over 40 hours a week being there and doing this. Certainly, the artist could say, come to my house, I'll sell to you. If you're selling to the public and talking to them for 3.5 hours in order to sell one piece of thing you do, you are not being an artist, you are being a salesperson, and you're not creating art. So if you wish to create art and be freed of it, then let someone else take the burden from you, and one of these someone else's is a good gallery. And I emphasize good galleries, because in every facet of life there are good people and there are less good people, and there are people who will be congenial and there are people who will not be congenial. So one of the great benefits that you have if you go with a gallery is that the gallery takes the responsibility off your hands of presenting you to the public. The gallery will give you publicity. The gallery will advertise for you. The gallery will be there 40 hours a week or more to show your works to the public and so forth. And for this, I honestly believe that a gallery deserves a small pittance in return. Certainly enough to keep going, and possibly enough to maybe even make a little money for the owner. This, in my case, doesn't seem to have worked out very well, but I have still managed to survive for 10 years and am very pleased with what I'm doing. Just very briefly, it's obvious that if a gallery buys a small sculpture, say, from you for $100, they cannot afford to sell it to someone else for $100, and they would be out of business in 3 days. They obviously have to sell it, and the general rule of thumb is the absolute minimum is double, because a gallery has tremendous expenses. They have rent, they have hired help, they have advertising, they have horrible taxes. You have no idea what they do in the state of Washington to galleries on taxes. You're taxed inventory tax on everything you possess, whether you own it or not. Even if it's on loan from an artist, the state will come and say that is yours and we are taxing you on it. All sorts of terrible hidden costs and things that a gallery owner has to contend with and take into account when they say, okay, we bought this from you for $100, but we'll have to sell it for at least $250 in order to stay in business. Sometimes the gallery will be able to afford to buy things outright from you. And in this case, usually a gallery has to say, okay, we'll pay a little less. And the reason for this is you get your money immediately. The piece may stay in the gallery for years. I've had a couple of pieces that have been there for 8 years, and I still have great belief and faith in them, but the right person hasn't come. So the money that I paid 8 years ago is gone. The person has it. It's not earning me a cent. It's not helping me keep my gallery going, but I was willing to risk it. And sooner or later, I have faith the right person is going to come in to buy the right piece. The other way to do it is to go on what we call a consignment. And you agree that the sale price of an item should be a certain amount of which the gallery gets a percentage. And this should always be an understood agreement and in writing between the gallery and the artist so that there's never any misunderstanding about this thing. In this case, eventually the artist will receive more money, but it may take a while. So there is that time lag thing. What I'm trying to emphasize here is that there's really a very good mutual relationship that can go on between a gallery and the artist by which both parties can be extremely happy. And if it's a good gallery and it's going to do its job by you, it's going to relieve you so that you have time to do what you're going to do best, which is be an artist. Well, I'd just like to close in saying a few things about the problems or the various aspects of being a native artist as opposed to being an artist, any kind of artist, just being known as an artist. I would say that my opinion of the markets at the present time is that there is a tremendous advantage in being known as a native artist because there is great interest on the part of the general public in a recreation and in an understanding of the Eskimo and the Indian past. And if your work has roots with your homes, with your villages, with your communities, and it shows it, it's going to have, at this point, greater impact than if you happen to be a native by birth, but you want to do absolutely abstract things which are, in a sense, indistinguishable from which thousands of people are doing who are exhibiting in New York and all across the country and all in Europe. In other words, any kind of contemporary artist. Now, this does not mean that I say if you feel you want to do this type of thing, you shouldn't do it. But if you have feelings within you of recreating your own past, and I heard a lot of that this morning, which I thought was very moving, and I was very touched by it, then not only is it good for you and for your people to rediscover themselves through the art, but it is also a financially advantageous thing at this point to have something that is a recognizable Eskimo or Indian object that comes from the past, even though it is going towards the future.
Jane Schulberg owns and operates Snow Goose Associates, a gallery of Eskimo and Northwest Coast Indian art in Seattle. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.